Anyway, James was so good, but he's also kind of a handsome man. So he would
Handsome
get,
zombie.
yeah, exactly. He was the handsome zombie.
Handsome.
It wasn't intended to be that way, but he was like, one day he came he came by the God, when I bumped, no, actually we had other friends. We were all at the same house that night hanging out. And he's like, "Yay." So I was at work the other day and a couple of ladies recognized me from the movie and I said, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah, they said I was the hot zombie." And I said, "Damn it, James." He goes, "It was kind of awesome." And I'm like, "Okay, then." But their face-wise, they're all too recognizable for them, any of them, to take the part of the lead zombie
I
mom
want
in
to see
that.
that when the credits roll. Hot zombie.
I mean, if I would have
James,
known anybody
whatever.
would have called him that, I
Hot
think he's
zombie.
Zombie 3.
Hot
Because I
zombie.
didn't, like, my brain didn't register as being anything. I'm like, you just ate the pantyhose and guts real good. Because it wasn't real guts. I mean, it's made out of pantyhose and white
What a
paper
great.
towel.
I was wondering
And
about this. See, you're giving me the secrets. So I always wanted to know,
it's a lot
brother.
of
Is
weird.
that what it is? It's paper
I think for
towels?
major productions it's different. For
Okay.
what we used like child size pantyhose and stuffed it with white paper towels that wouldn't have emblems and logos. Put that all into cherry and strawberry jello to harden it up and give it the red tone. Then added tomato paste. I can't tell you how it tasted because I didn't taste it. Then pull it out. So you had the chunks of hardened jello in the middle and the pieces of hardened jello that turn the material itself into hardened. Anyway, if you watch the Disease of the Dead 1, that is what they're eating is zombie guts.
I have to check
Oh,
this
there's also
out.
some cherry.
Disease of the Dead?
Yeah, that's what our two movies were called.
Disease of the Dead
They're
1 and
short.
2?
Yes. Well, Disease of the
15,
Dead,
20 minutes?
first one's maybe 5, second one's 15, and probably should be 12.
What happened in the editing room?
There's just pieces I left in there because at the time I thought were funny, and I still think they're funny, but I see what people say now. The baby cries too long.
You're growing, Steve. Steve, it's
It's
growth.
just,
It's growth.
I thought, I mean, this is, my brain's like, this is the funniest thing ever.
This is the best.
But hindsight.
Look, man, as a guy who laughs at his own jokes all the time, I feel you, baby. I feel you. He's like, does that work? Did that one work? It worked for me.
Yeah, no, it's,
There
I
you
know
are, clicking. Oh, yeah, that's in there. We got 3 minutes of zombie baby
what
crying. We're keeping that. No
you're.
one's telling me any different.
Hindsight, I would cut
Ooh,
maybe
that's funny, man.
half
Steve,
that
that's
scene.
funny.
It's not supposed to be.
My man, I mean, this should be the podcast too, brother. Just talking to you about what you've done in your crazy ass
Stupid
life.
nonsense.
I mean, I've done some things with my DJing career. I've been in some
Sure.
interesting
Oh no, I
places.
don't doubt it.
But for you, my friend, I mean,
Oh,
you've
nice.
also been, well, you know what goes into a, like, I don't know, a shoestring budget production of a
No,
zombie
that's
movie.
true.
It's like, we're gonna need you. You got like a runner, you got like a showrunner, like, hey kid, here's $20. Go to the store. I need all the jello on the shelf. Make it red and don't mess up.
Right, don't bring back some weird green
Otherwise, you're fired.
nonsense.
No, I'm kidding. I can't fire you. I can't afford that. You get over here, you rascal.
He's
Oh
like
man, that's great. Anyway.
Yeah, had it been a zombie thing, I'm sure it probably would have got done. But yeah, they were doing a
What's your favorite? That even brings up the question. I'm a questioner, I'm an interviewer.
yeah.
What's the favorite zombie movie? What's your favorite?
Oh man.
I got mine. I mean, I love Romero, but
Yeah.
Snyder's Dawn
Well,
of the
Snyder's
Dead.
Dawn of the Dead is really masterful.
Yeah,
And
it's just
like
a stroke of genius.
between the two of those, I mean, that one is more the one that I would watch multiple times with people simply because it's put together so well and you have a really good cast. I mean, Ving Rhames kills it in there.
Oh.
And this is Snyder like
Anything Ving
post
does.
trying to be over the top with himself.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that might be his first movie actually.
Dude, I love the
First or
Arby's
second?
commercials because of Ving Rhames, my friend. That's how much
That's
I love
true.
Ving. Yeah, but
He's awesome.
yeah, Snyder was, I think, doing what he does best there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
As far as a piece, I mean, he's working off the previous movie. Now, granted, you can't compare the Romero one to that one simply because the Romero one went way south. I mean, there's pieces in the Romero one that are awesome, but then you have a pie fight in the middle with bikers. What? No, it makes sense. We have a pie fight in the mall. Hang on. No. What?
Well, I
Man.
think once the cult status of the original Night of the Living Dead was established and there was an appetite for more,
Sure.
I think, and that's harkens back to what you just said about being a director, you know, and you're like, I love this. And Romero said the same thing about the pie fight in the middle of the mall, and he's like, the allegory. Yeah. It's just the allegory. You see the metaphor. I want people to know that they're sheep. Yeah. And here you go.
Okay. With that piece in there, I guess I can see it. I mean, the original movie, even though it gets a lot, it's original Night of Living Dead. I mean, that would probably be, between the group of them, what I would like best is 28 Days Later, the first one. And then the Zack Snyder Day of the Dead.
I'll be honest with you. Anything Danny Boyle does, I think is really good.
Yeah.
He's quite genius.
Yeah.
In what he does.
Heck yeah, man.
He's an amazing filmmaker. He's a great storyteller, too. He did Trainspotting.
He did.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with that one, but it sounds like you are. You're probably familiar with it a lot more than I am.
I don't know, but man, there's pieces in there, and there's other things that I'm like, that I should have seen in life, and I just never
cared. Sure, don't get around to it.
Someone bring up, there's a movie, oh gosh, Sam Rockwell's in it. It's about a kid and his mom trying to find her way in life with her new boyfriend, who's played by Steve Carell, who's the bad guy in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what it's called. Time and Time Again, or mm-hmm. Time and Again.
Yeah,
it's something like that. There's a whole bunch of movies that have the same words, but Time Before, I don't remember. Time and Again, I think is what it's called, or Time the Way Back, maybe. No, I don't remember. It doesn't matter. Google Steve Carell.
Google it, people. Google everything this man says.
What's I said his name a second ago.
Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, if you Google those two together, when you
he's
find
he's a great
that movie,
actor too.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Fantastic,
he's so awesome.
Actor.
But it's a movie like sort of about, and there's also a water park through the whole movie, which is where Sam works, so it's a big part of it. Oh. Anyway, it's a movie that all has pieces that the names I would have, should have seen this thing.
Yeah,
but I never seen it.
Well.
So I got not forced. I mean, kind of forced because they're like, oh no, you're gonna like it. I'm like, nah, I don't know about that. And then, of course, we started watching it, and I'm like, I don't know how I didn't watch this before. Maybe because it was, I don't know, not my normal flavor, I guess.
I mean, not everything can be by Christopher Nolan.
Man, it doesn't have to be.
It certainly doesn't. That guy has some big ideas.
I mean, he does.
It still bothers me that Warner Brothers didn't use that in their shared DC universe.
Sure.
Still bothers me. What's the problem with it? I mean, there is no problem. He's a comic book character, so you made him age out 10 years. Who cares? You set up Robin. I'm there. You got me. I mean, maybe it was the death of Heath Ledger, my friend. Maybe it was.
Maybe.
But
with those movies, like when it comes to the third one.
The Rises?
The one with Bane?
Yeah, Rises, yeah. No one knew who I was before I put the mask on. Sorry, that's not a very good Bane.
How about you could tell you were doing, though?
I was trying. I was trying.
I think that he didn't want to get Schumachered. And, like, I can get that if you look at it as a
I like how you verbed that. Thing. I got Schumachered! Damn it!
Well, I mean, you come to the end of his movie, and, like,
I know what you're talking about, too, which is funny.
We do this whole, maybe Batman's dead. Maybe Batman's alive. There's a giant statue. He gave away Wayne Manor. Oh, and here comes this Robin kid who is supposed to be a smart detective, but yet did no detectiving the entire movie. Every answer was handed to him, and even when the answer was sitting next to him, he still didn't really figure it out till it was way later. The only thing he figured out is that Batman is Bruce Wayne because he saw Bruce Wayne one time when he was a kid. Bruce Wayne's a liar. He himself is a liar, so he must be Batman. That logic makes no sense at all.
It was shoehorned in by Nolan. It really was. Robin, just in general. It's like, you should go by your middle name. What is it? Yeah. Robin. No, that, no, no,
right.
No.
Yeah.
No, he really was. But, I mean, the central plot points of those. And, of course, the villains in both
sure.
those. Yeah.
As far as, like, a thing, I mean, it's not that the movie doesn't have pieces that are awesome about it. That's not the case at all. It's a decent enough movie.
Mm-hmm.
But you come to the end of it, and there's no way to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can say, oh, they can make a Robin movie. But the problem is this is no Robin that exists at all.
Yeah.
Not that it has to be a carbon copy, but when you look at Robin, you've got four choices, and this is none of them.
Yeah.
And you leave him with, oh, he found the cave that's underneath the orphanage now that at some point they're going to wonder where all the power's going.
And, you know, he's still alive. They show him alive.
They do.
At the end.
Now, granted, is it real? Or
with
is it
Selena Kyle.
But is it true, or is it what Alfred's seeing in his own dying imagination?
Not that Alfred makes his tea with mushrooms, but, I mean, he's, no hallucination. Everybody I talk to, Steve, literally says that it's canon. It is not a hallucination. It right. is what it is, and that's the happy ending that Nolan wished upon. And of course, you know, got it, and is just like, this is it. This is a tidy little wrap up to my series right. in a superhero way, in a real comic book type of way. The happy ending.
Sure. I mean, if it's real, and it's not that
you're not a man who believes it's real, are you? You think Alfred is just sitting there hallucinating in Madrid?
Well, I mean, he is.
Just drank some coffee, and all of a sudden he starts seeing people.
I mean, it seems people. a little much that he would just be in the right place at the right time to happenstance into it.
The seventh sense.
You know?
Jesus. Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, but again, how lazy was some of the endings, like, was that ending of the film? You got the nuclear blast, he saves everybody, oh, the autopilot was fixed.
Right, well, and that's something else, too, that those movies bug me about, all three of them, actually, is that we get Lucius Fox in there, we make him the gadget guy. And that's cool, because, I mean, Lucius was in the comics. That's okay, whatever. But we never rely on Bruce Wayne being smart until the last movie when it's a MacGuffin, because he fixed the magic autopilot. All the rest of the time, he didn't fix anything.
And some of the best Batman moments are him using his intellect.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, he's called the world's greatest detective, what, for no reason?
Right.
No, he is the world's greatest detective. So, but that's one part of the movie, I think, that a lot of people don't really pay respects to. I mean, as a Batman is the character, period, unless, of course, I think you're a comic diehard. You maybe are aware of the title, the moniker, but how many times do people revel in that stuff? Look at 89 and sure. 92. We didn't really get any of that. And I get it. Burton wasn't trying to put that together. Burton had his vision. For me, though, I mean, I would lose it if I saw Matches Malone in a movie.
Sure.
In a big time Warner Brothers movie.
I think if they were to ever try to do a Batman series, like as a show again, I mean, I love the 66 series because I love Adam West. I think the man was amazing.
Dude is super amazing.
But as a thing, if we were to go back to Batman ever, that's the whole reason why we don't have Batman cameo in things. Like you can't have Batman cameo in an Arrow TV show.
Right.
Mostly because Arrow is Batman. kind of. I still love Stephen Amell too. I think that guy's great as a person and like as an actor, he's a decent actor. But like as a person in the world, he's awesome.
He was an okay Casey Jones.
Sure,
he was an okay Casey Jones. Casey. I did appreciate when he put the rollerblades on and took on Bebop and Rocksteady. Sure. The second one, Michael Bay's Turtles. If we're not getting the reference here, but
right.
I think he is good at what he does. I also agree with you. And he didn't make a bad Casey Jones, man.
No. Yeah. Well, he's gotten his new show is supposed to, at some point, I don't know when it's going to premiere, but it's a wrestling show where he is a wrestler in a world of entertainment wrestling. So, which he's also very about that in real life, too. He's friends with a couple of guys and he's done appearances as Steve Amell.
I know Stone Cold Steve Austin's real name, right? I know, like, The Undertaker's real name. I know where they came from. So you're talking to definitely a fan. I get that. It's almost hand in hand, the larger than life characters. I've always just gravitated to that. The idea sure. of being more than you are.
Right, right.
Right.
But with that like whole Batman thing, if they were to do another show, I think maybe if you were to build out the pacing of a TV series, whether it was a Netflix one or probably not Netflix, it'd probably be HBO Max at this point.
Yes.
Then maybe at that point we might get some of these other monikers. Cause like the Matches Malone part, I don't know if we'd ever see that in a movie just because it'd be hard to set up.
It would have to be a long movie.
You need to have more.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was only a Batman movie, then maybe we get a 4-hour epic and Scott could do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Send Zach something, right?
Zach, call Zach and Ben. Do care? Have Zach.
Let's get some more CrossFit scenes. That's right. All I want. Let's pull a couple of tires. Did the chains are flying?
Right.
How many pull-ups can you do, Affleck? Really, show me. Act here.
I mean, more than I expected. So that's good. I mean, let him shoot.
You think? You know, being Jennifer Lopez's man softened him up a little bit in the midsection. You think winning those Oscars don't give the man a little motivation?
You know, I don't know. His time
guy like, writes Argo and he's like, whatever, I'm cool. I don't have to worry about it for the rest of my life.
They did The Town and Argo both and they're fantastic. And like,
The Town is fantastic.
Yeah, it's so good. So like, as far as a director, I mean, the guy is really, really good. And I don't really know where, I think the only thing that really broke him is that Batman, I think, was more than what he expected it to be. And there's lots of videos on YouTube where you can go watch Ben Affleck die during interviews, and it's when people are asking him about Batman.
Inside. Oh, yeah, it's you, like, so you good. I love face. The meme. I know the meme.
You see it.
The sad fleck.
Right. And, like, I think that maybe he thought he was bigger than Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, as a thing, when Bell was playing Batman, you never saw him go and push other pet projects during that time.
Right.
And, like, I think that's where Ben made a mistake, because he made that movie Live by Night, or Live by Midnight, the bootlegger movie that most of none of us saw.
Right.
And it was his pet project. Like, it was one he put together. He put all of his heart and soul into building it. And, like, as a thing, he launched it. And then none of the interviews he went on wanted to talk about it. So it's release weekend, and that's what he's there to do. He's pushing his new movie, and all they want to ask about is Batman. Just go back and watch the J-Lo videos with him in them, and the dude was in amazing shape back then. It's crazy.
Maybe they'll hook back up, right? They're both single now. I mean, if you're holding out hope, are you holding the candle for him, Steve? If you are.
For the two of them, okay, Bennifer, no. Yeah. Man, Geely's bad choices. I think the man's better off trying to do other things.
What, top five worst movies on everybody's list?
I mean, yeah, it's pretty bad.
It is pretty bad.
So,
But, you know, you did mention pet projects, and Jennifer Lopez is like, hey, I'll do a movie, but I want to, you know, be kind of in love with my new man, and we want to do something sweet, but, like, I'm a tough-talking Manhattan chick, and, you know, I want to fall in love with him. And they're like, yeah, sure, Jennifer, you're one of the biggest stars on the planet. We can make this happen. People will buy this.
Oh, yeah.
They did for a minute, and then they realized what kind of piece of trash was on screen there.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know when people aren't trying, don't you? And Geely was one of those parts.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could tell Ben Affleck, he just threw on some sloppy voice, didn't even worry about it whatsoever, even, like, slipped in and out of it during the entire movie.
This, right.
Like, Brooklyn thing he's doing, like, heavy Brooklyn thing, you know, and just... I feel bad for the guy who's in National Treasure who played the kid that they were watching, because, like, he went Simple Jack on it, right? And you know what you never do if you've watched Tropic Thunder? Right. He had to. And he was just like, I'm going to be in a movie with Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck, and it's freaking Geely.
Right.
Could you imagine that? He's got to put that on his resume, and he's in National Treasure,
right,
which is a national treasure.
It is fantastic, both of them.
Cage does many good things, my
friend.
How
did not get three of those?
Cage does many wonderful things.
I mean, he does. There's a lot of other...
Did you see that Kung Fu movie he was in recently with the alien?
No.
I forget what it was called. I think it was called, like, some karate or something. Anyway, there's this extraterrestrial alien that comes by to Earth every, like, 10 years, they challenge the biggest and best warriors. Yeah, it's a Mortal Kombat ripoff with Nicolas Cage. So, exactly what you expect you get.
Of course,
the overacting Cage does almost every time he's on camera sings. It just makes my soul sing.
Man, sounds like I need to watch this.
He's like a real-life Jack Burton. Right, he's like a personified Jack Burton.
Sure,
right. He's just going in there thinking he's going to be Nicolas Cage, and then he becomes Nicolas Cage. And, like, so, what are you going to give me, Nick? I'm going to give you Nicolas Cage. Yeah, it's like there's no, like, I'm going to give you subdued Englishman. I'm going to give you Nicolas Cage. But wait, this is, you know, Pride and Prejudice, and you're the romantic role, but you're still going to give you Cage.
Man.
Which is why The Wicker Man is still one of the all-time overacting gigs in the entire universe.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
The bees!
I know, my God.
Not the bees!
It's the worst. So bad. The rest of it's not... I mean, the rest of it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It gets real bad at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see his Willy's Wonderland, I think is what it's called?
I did see, I think, the promo or the preview.
I think that's what it's called. Right. I could be wrong. I want to say it's maybe Willy's Playland or Willy's... It's Willy's Wonderland. I'm pretty sure that's right.
The dude just works, man. He just works.
He does. That movie, it's basically Five Nights at Freddy's, except not Five Nights at Freddy's.
Okay, I did see that.
Okay.
I did see that. And Cage is the weird, hard-drinking, like, whatever guy who comes in and, like, saves...
Mops up the town? Mops up the restaurant. It is fantastic because he has no lines in the movie.
Mm.
Not a single line.
Oh, that's good.
He does make noises and he grunts and, you know, drinks his energy drink and plays pinball.
That's good stuff.
And then kills things.
That's good stuff.
But no dialogue. Wow. It's amazing. He doesn't talk. He doesn't say any dialogue to anyone in the entire
movie.
That's
a must watch, sir. Nicolas Cage not talking on screen.
Man, well, he does a pretty good job beating up animatronic animals. It's amazing.
Oh, we've all had our, you know, fantasies while in Chuck E. Cheese, my friend. We have.
Yeah, well, there's occasions that certain ones are just really, really creepy.
Well, animatronic things are definitely hit or miss when it comes to that. And I think the creators of Five Nights definitely know that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's...
Oh, that's all it stays.
The idea of the semblance of life. I mean, that's why people are still afraid of, like, robotics if you're talking about bigger themes. But you know, it's just the idea that you can create life, but it's a really bad representation of it. And it's like, you know, trying to create the same things life does, like in existence. And you're like, whoa, this is completely unnatural. Completely unnatural.
It moves almost right, but not right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, that's not good. That's not good at all.
A couple years back, before the whole pandemic thing, I wound up going to, it was after they'd opened Galaxy's Edge, and so me and my friend Karen went out to San Diego to, or not San Diego, to Los Angeles. I was going to San Diego Comic-Con. Karen lives near Anaheim, so anyway, we went to Disney for mostly the Star Wars part. But, you know, she wanted to take me on other rides too, so we went up on Splash Mountain. On our Splash Mountain ride, eventually the ride broke down inside after the big drop.
You were on it?
So yeah, we were on it. Us and a few other logs got stuck inside the...
Oh, God, no!
So we were inside with some of the animatronic area. And like, initially, it wasn't like the weirdest thing, but after we were in there for a while, because we were in there for a minute before they got any people in there to help us walk out through. So I walked through Splash Mountain, like the insides of it, which is also kind of, it's kind of neat, but it was definitely weird because a few of those things move, and a few of them move like... You only see it for a couple seconds when you're going past it on the swoosh ride, and so it doesn't look too weird. But when you're in there for, like, I don't know, we were in there for, like, 30 minutes before they actually got us out of the boats.
Did you get your picture taken?
Well, she has a picture someplace, yes.
There's the drop. Probably looking like you look right now, just...
Yep. I mean, I'm not Splash really Mountain. A roller coaster person, and I'm like, how much water is this actually going to get on this? So she's like, oh, it won't be that bad.
I don't want to be
wet.
Of course,
she was trying to trick me, and I'm like, Karen, we should have said something about my phone.
She's
like,
come on, man.
She's like, don't worry, it'll be fine in my bag. I've Karen, done this million times. She's like, what did you think it was going to be, a Splash Mountain? I'm like, yeah, but I thought maybe, I don't know.
It splashes you.
Anyway, it was definitely a interesting thing.
Literal translation.
Because I thought, how many people get to walk through this thing, really?
Right.
Because it seemed like even the staff person that was helping us get out of the boats to put us on the other side to go around to finally find a door, it wasn't necessarily used to doing it.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
My friend, everything about this is interesting. But let's talk some paper right now. Sure. Huh? Let's talk some books.
Yeah, of course.
I was, you know, taking a step back, reading on the toilet, which is one of my favorite places to read. Too much information, full disclosure. And I'm reading kind of, you know, the mop-up to King in Black. And you know what I thought?
Huh.
I just thought Donny Cates' meteoric rise in the last 5, maybe 10 years
has been less than that.
Super impressive, right?
Oh, yeah.
How long has he been doing it? 2, 3 now?
Rise-wise or just in general?
Rise-wise, because I'm sure he's paid his dues.
Man, as far as time... I want to say he probably his current rise of fame has been over the last 2.5, maybe 3 years.
Right.
Because Baby Teeth came out and he started getting noticed around Baby Teeth, and God Country came out, and God Country did really well. But before that, he did a series called The Paybacks. I was trying to actually tell somebody about this yesterday and could not remember what it was called. A book called The Paybacks for Dark Horse Comics. It was supposed to be a 7 or 8 part miniseries. Got canceled at number 5 because sales were lagging. Surprisingly, the artist on those series was... Oh, gosh, Nick Shaw? I think that's the right name. That might be the wrong name. Sorry if it is the wrong name. I think that's who it was.
Sorry, Nick Shaw.
Right.
Or maybe Nick something else.
Yeah. Man, I should remember that. Because the two of them are currently doing his crossover book over at Image.
Really?
Which is doing really well.
Yeah.
Issue 1's in fourth print.
Yeah.
Issue 2 is at least in second print. 3's in second print.
Wow, that's great sales.
4's in second print.
That's pretty good for what's going on with the industry, man.
As far as releases are concerned, I mean, the book's popular enough that stores are still trying to order it because people still are trying to get it.
But Image is with Diamond still, correct?
Yes.
Right.
I mean, at this point, the only company that's right now not with them is DC. I mean, Marvel's doing something maybe at the end of the year.
Yeah,
so
a month ago.
As far as time's concerned, we're still not entirely sure what is going to happen there. I mean, at this point, it looks very much like as of October, there will no longer be products released as a sole distribution through Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
However, Diamond, from what we understand, is still going to have access to Marvel titles. We just have no idea what the structure that's going to look like and whether it's going to be a variant cover system or what exactly it's going to be. So hopefully in the next month we know more about that, because Random House is currently in the process of opening up applications to stores. So we'll see how that goes.
Have you got yours?
I mean, well, yeah, but their website just won't. I think we're an anomaly, though. They made it sound like we were an anomaly.
Grand Junction, Colorado.
I don't.
Where's that?
It's the weirdest thing. Yeah, it actually made me think I was going crazy, because we got set up. Everything got, you know, in line the way it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And then we can never get the website to log on.
Yep.
And I thought, man, this is, if this is what Random House is putting out, that can't be good. I mean, we were afraid of Lunar whenever it started with DC, and their website worked just fine. And here's Random House, who's like this giant publisher. And I thought, man, how can they not get their website right? Now, since then, of course, we had our representative person at Random House also try to access our account, and he had exactly the same problem. So I have to assume that somewhere in the matrix of things, our particular account exists outside of normal activity, which how that's possible, I don't know.
You took the blue pill, huh?
I mean, maybe I didn't do it on purpose.
Right?
So that's more of a big question still. As far as the thing, I don't really know.
Well, I mean, I guess, and you're probably with me here, the only thing I think about bottom line is whatever's going to happen, let's hope it's not, and if it's negative, let's hope it's not passed along to the customer, correct?
Sure. I mean, that's the end of the day. I mean, none of us really want anything like that side to fall off on stuff. And we've had a weird road since COVID. I mean, books that got canceled and never come back. And series that did return actually to print, which made us all think maybe it was a, well, not all of us. It made most of us think it was a test, which is weird. But like books that never returned, Nebula, it was supposed to be a 5-part miniseries. Only 2 issues came out. Some websites are still soliciting like early pre-sales for issue 3, but issue 1 and 2 came out back in the end of 2019. Beginning of 2020. So January, February.
This is Thanos' daughter, Nebula.
Yes. Yes. She had her own miniseries. Only 2 issues of it came out.
This was because of Kieran's popularity, you think? The actress's popularity in the movies?
You know, I do find her to be amazing. But I don't know
how long she's in
that
makeup chair, bro.
Oh gosh, I'm sure hours.
Oh,
well, it was amazing. So during the first Guardians of the Galaxy is a big reveal, which I was at the San Diego Comic Con when they did this. It was really crazy. And there's videos on YouTube, so you can find it. When she came out and they introduced her during the panel about Guardians of the Galaxy, eventually we got to her and she made a big reveal where she pulled off a wig she was wearing that showed that she had completely shaved her head for the part.
Oh yeah.
And, it was like, the wig was really pretty seamless. Now granted, most of us are nosebleed section for everything, but as a thing, you had no idea until she did that.
Yeah.
It was wild.
Very good.
But yeah, as a thing, I mean, she definitely went full hog for the part, which is really awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume the Nebula book was really happening because Guardians is just so popular. I mean, we did a Yondu book, and it was more based around the movie Yondu versus the comic book Yondu.
Michael Rooker's the man.
Oh yeah, dude's awesome.
Michael Rooker is the man.
Yeah, he's an amazing dude. Actually, like the dude
you met
holds
him.
An audience. Yeah, Colorado Springs.
Oh,
he does a lot of Well, when conventions were happening, he was doing a lot of them. Because I think he just enjoys entertaining the crowd, to be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, because he would full on like wander through the crowd.
If I ever had an opportunity to do that, I would. Exactly like Rooker does.
Oh, for sure.
Because I would enjoy it that much. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, the entire subplot of number 2, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, was the father-son relationship. So you get... you know, a Centauri archer, basically, who appeared in, a handful of books?
Well, he was throughout the original Guardians of the Galaxy run in the 80s. He was, like, the only character that wound up existing in both incarnations of things, but very, very different over time. I mean, the original Guardians were set thousands of years in the future. So the characters we know as the Guardians now were not the same characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, in movie 2, at the very end, we see a bunch of different ship captains during the send-off of the funeral.
Uh-huh.
And the different captains are all members of the original comic book series from the 80s. So, like, the characters Stallone's playing and the fire ice-looking guy.
And then Michelle Yeoh.
Yes.
Yeah.
All of them were playing different pieces that were part of the original group. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't tell you those names because those books were not the most popular things in the world.
You know, Marvel in the 80s was interesting. I can't quite put it on. I have this number 1 of what they call Displaced Paranormal 7, DP7.
Oh, okay.
Which was a offshoot of what they were doing. They tried to create like an entire different section as far as publishing houses go. They wanted to create this new one. There was a few other teams, and of course, Guardians of the Galaxy was involved in that. But, you know, it's that age-old lesson that they learned is everybody gravitates back to what they love.
Sure.
The Captain America's, the Iron Man's, these Hulks, you know, the people that were established, set the table, and then continued to do and move the medium forward.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like we always go back to Bruce Wayne in Batman, which kind of they're exploring now. You know, Tom Taylor, Tom King, everything they're doing with Batman, I think it's kind of that. They're seeing how far they can take it out.
Sure.
Because I'm not... See, this and this funny thing is, like, I'm not quite sure either, too, Bruce Wayne will be back, although he's in England right now fighting the White Knights or whatever.
He's got that going on, too.
Right, like, right.
There's a couple different series running for
Ghost
him right
Maker
now.
Is the new one as well.
Ghostmaker is a new... Well, he's become a rival slash sidekick.
So is it side? Is he actual sidekick? Is he,
I mean, yes,
is that how you
no.
see him?
Currently, yes. When he first showed up on the scene, he was very much rival. So think like... is a bad example, but think like Pokemon. You had your rival throughout the game. If you played Red, which was the main character in the old days before he became Ash, you had your rival character. He was the guy you're competing against, sort of.
Yeah.
And that's what Ghostmaker winds up initially starting as. And when he first shows up as an adult, that's very much what he's doing. Now, since then, he showed up in the books a few times, and he's not necessarily like full on sidekicking, but because Batman's living on a more subdued budget. At one point, the two of them are in their makeshift lair, and he's like, yeah, we need to spar and practice. And he's very much like, Fitz is almost like a sidekick slash co-rival, I guess. Because he's not a really bad guy now, but at the same time, he's like, hey, if you fail Batman, I'm going to replace you.
I don't know if you read, and I'm sure you did, Thomasi's run on Batman and Robin in the New 52.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I equated him to nobody a lot. Somebody as far as...
You know, style-wise, he's very like
more
that.
Altruistic, right? Yeah. Because of the background they come from in the training with Ducard and everybody that Wayne went through in those formative years of becoming Batman. Yeah, he was the same kind of guy, but... You know, and it's always funny when you have a difference in opinion, and we're talking characters here, you know, the ethos of Batman being tested once again about, you know, not killing and whatever, because this Ghostmaker fella has no qualms about it.
Oh, no, yeah, he's more, body count's happy, it's fine.
And of course, if you want to grab these books, you certainly can at Top 5 in the Hillcrest Plaza, right off First and Orchard here in Grand Junction, where Steve is holding court, I would say.
Sure.
Yes, indeed, man. Yeah, I was reading Kate's. I'm excited about that because they're kind of giving him the keys of the kingdom. They really are. I mean, he's got Thor now. I'm excited about his collaboration with one of my all-time favorite Thor artists. I think the Thor artist, if you ask me. Simonson was amazing.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I love Simonson. Like, the entire omnibus of Simonson is an amazing read. But I don't know, I might be saying Oliver Coypel.
Oh, yeah, Coypel.
Coypel,
he's fantastic,
I think
yeah.
He is my definitive Thor artist. I did like Esad Ribic.
I think it's Ribic.
He was great. He was great, too.
He's also good, yeah. Similar styles.
But Coypel was my guy, and it got me thinking, because Siege is one of my all-time favorite Marvel crossovers, and that King in Black is wrapped up, Steve, I was reading some criticism and commentary on it. They called it the best major crossover event in the history of the Marvel books, and I wanted to get your opinion on that, and I also wanted to know your favorite crossover of all time in the Marvel, in the House of Ideas.
Oh, man. So when we're limited to Marvel, it makes a different state, because I would have a straight answer if you were just calling all of them.
Oh, okay. Well, let's hear all of them.
Well, my favorite of any of the groups, at least at this point, granted, there's a lot more comic books to come out. So, but as a thing, Blackest Night was probably, I would say,
for the
5 years around it,
cool,
it was the best thing to ever come out.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, brother.
As far as an event book. Now, I'll give you... If you read the Green Lantern stories at the same time, along with the Blackest Night books, it did make a much fatter story. So if you only read the miniseries, it's still really great. You can read the 0 through 8, and the volumes have the whole thing.
It's super fun.
And it's
absolutely
fantastic.
Just bombastic, good stuff.
Yeah. It had two books that paired with it that made for a much bigger story if you're reading them as well. Because we had Green Lantern, the normal Green Lantern, happening at the same time,
yep.
And Green Lantern Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And like writer-wise, I want to say Peter Tomasi was involved in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, story-wise, you had Geoff Johns and Peter DeMasi building all this stuff with Green Lantern, and all three of the books made for such a huge thing. But even by itself, just the core book, Blackest Night, was still fantastic.
It's a great choice, man. I almost forget, because it was so good. I just thought it was such a wonderful sticking. I did enjoy Rebirth from Green Lantern, sure. The Green Lantern Rebirth and everything that came out of that, the Cores of Light. Blackest Night was super good. Yeah. I remember now getting the Larfleas. It was a four-issue run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Rage of the Red Lanterns as well, watching Guy Gardner become one. And, of course, the House Cat. What's the House Cat's name? Blix?
Oh, man.
Is it Blix? I want to say it's Blix.
Shoot. I know it, and I can see him, and my brain doesn't remember what his name is right now.
Right.
It might come back to me while we talk.
What a wonderful concept, though. And from what was really established in the early parts of Green Lantern and kind of was able to kind of erase what happened in the early 90s with Parallax, you know,
because
90s comic book time, and it's really interesting to talk about, but it's not a really pretty time in the industry.
Hey, there were some rough stories.
So,
sure.
You know, and John setting it up and seeing it come to fruition and creating so many avenues for storytelling after that, that was really cool. I mean, I did have definite creative interest and emotional interest in almost every Lantern Corps because of the way the story was set up.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, they fleshed out characters in each different group. And, I mean, Larfleas is a good example. I mean, he's the only one of his group, and they explain exactly why that is. There's a fantastic issue that was called the Larfleas Christmas Special. That was hard to say. My gosh. The Christmas Special is fantastic because it's all about... So Larfleas learns about Santa Claus, and Larfleas is the
greediest son of a gun.
Yeah, Orange Lantern, and the Orange Lantern is avarice, so greed. And he learns that Santa Claus grants wishes, so he decides he needs to find Santa Claus. And it's almost heartbreaking as it goes, because once he realizes Santa Claus, well, you know, if you're an adult, Santa Claus is real, but not doesn't answer the questions the way we expect him to. It's very heartbreaking. It's kind of fantastic. There's also a Christmas cookie. What do you call that when you make cookies? You have not a pattern, but a recipe. My gosh, that was hard. There's the Christmas recipe.
I didn't quite
recipe.
Know where you're going.
No, you're
with
good.
That one, brother. I was like, okay.
I was trying to figure out how to say it. So the Christmas recipe for Larfleas Christmas cookies, they're an orange and lemon fantastic.
You made them.
Oh, wait, no, I did not. My buddy Ross, the baker in the clan, he did make them. Actually, made them a few different years. Actually,
were they shaped like the ring?
No, that would be fantastic. He's more of a baker and a musician than he is really an artist. So different type of artist.
I see.
I bet you if I asked him, he probably would though. But he did not. But they were fantastic regardless. But yeah, the issue itself is a fantastic like one shot issue as book wise.
Definitely.
But yeah, just all the different characters in there, and like, as far as the different cores, they all had their own like value premise and the way they were designed. Even though a couple were ratconny, I mean, the Star Sapphires were sort of ratconny, but they were ratconned in a way that made sense and fit real well.
Right.
I mean, same thing with the Parallax idea, like explaining how Hal didn't just go crazy.
Yeah,
he was driven there.
Yeah, one of the best redemption stories I thought ever penned in the history of comics, because that's a very familiar arc for a lot of people.
Sure.
You know, the tarnishing the reputation of your main character and then them climbing out of the muck. And
oh, yeah.
It was great. It was great. I absolutely loved it, and I forget about it. I actually just read Rebirth the other day again because I enjoy Van Siver's work. And, of course, John's is writing.
Sure.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're running out of time here, brother. So
it's Marvel, best Marvel one?
Do you think it, like, yeah, before we let you go here, do you think it's the best Marvel crossover ever?
I don't know if I'd say the best ever. I mean, it is really good.
Did you like A versus X?
I did like A versus X. I feel like A versus X answered a lot of really cool questions, and we got to shine lights on, like, the way the world views Cyclops. Generally speaking, they treat him very much like a Boy Scout, and that's not really the truth. A versus X, we see a lot of that because he's driving this whole other team of X-Men that are basically X-Men built to kill, and he's like, it's okay to put the kids on there.
Yeah.
A few of them are killy.
Yeah.
And we have like a change of place between Wolverine and him where Wolverine's like, no, man, you can't have the kids doing that.
Yeah.
When Wolverine's normally the one covered in blood.
Right.
So it was interesting to see the two of them switch sides.
Mm-hmm.
The chase of how to exploit one particular kid. I mean, Hope Summers, her whole drive and through that whole story is basically two different factions of our X-Men / Avengers trying to decide what her future is supposed to be. And it was just interesting to see how that played out. So I liked it. I wouldn't necessarily say it's better. I think like those two fall in the same category. I mean, I'll give you the writing style of the stuff happening has advanced regardless, which is going to be the truth with any miniseries or any event series. I really like Secret Empire, the whole Steve Rogers thing and the whole Hell Hydra thing. I like that one a lot. And I don't know if it's because I'm more connected to Cap than I am to Venom. I mean, I like Venom too. I don't have any problem with him. And the whole lead between there with him and his son Dylan, all the different pieces we get out of that particular story. The King and Black story is really interesting.
It's really good.
We get to the end of it. It still has the same kind of thing where we get to the end and you're like, oh, so that's the end. Okay. Whereas like when you go back to Secret Empire, I'll give you the end's a little willy-nilly.
Yep.
I mean, we turn into having two Captain Americas, which is pretty weird. So we have Steve Rogers, Captain America, who's out to redeem his name. And then we have Steve-el, who's the evil Steve Rogers. Oh, yeah.
Did you do that? Is that what you? Steve-el? Did you come up with that one?
No. No.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Man, there's a lot of weirdness in the world. Sometimes I gleam to it. So
that's good.
One I do like. I could not tell you Steve-el's who pinned it original, but yeah. Steve-el, the evil Steve Rogers, who is still somewhere in a shield slash probably Hydra stronghold. In a prison, and at some point, I mean, if he doesn't shake out in the world, it'd be really surprising. But the whole turn in that, when we explain that the world didn't turn, the way that whole thing is set up, the way that the world changes around Steve, it's not really the world. It's all in Steve's head. So, like, nothing else changes with history, which I think people initially got confused by that. Because, like, oh, so he's been a bad guy the whole time, and all the people he's known just let it be okay? Or didn't? I guess didn't know, or they were evil too. When the truth is, the only thing that really changed is his mindset. His mindset was reshaped to side with Hydra, and so effectively, he never did anything
different.
Via
a cosmic cube given sentience, yes, and given form.
Also super crazy, but
yeah,
yes.
Wild stuff there, yeah.
Right. But very interesting, which I don't, as far as like a thing, when you look at the movies, if all you really know from the books is the movies, the main biggest difference in the stones is that the cosmic cube was never a stone, so the Tesseract was never part of the cosmic cube, or sorry, never part of the Infinity Gauntlet.
Right,
it's its own jam altogether.
Right,
and while yes, it does transport people and does a lot of other stuff, and did imprison the Red Skull for multiple years.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not necessarily part of any of the Thanos slash cosmic cube
story. True, it's not an Infinity Gauntlet stone. Star. It's not an Infinity Stone. Yeah.
So like Thanos has gone after it too. He also failed at that, but as a thing, like it's its own jam in the comic books.
Mm.
But yeah, you're right. Like it. A part of it broke off, became a sentient little girl who seemed to have every power in the world.
Hmm.
And at one point, she was misled by a faction of Hydra that they wanted everyone to be friends. In order to do that, they all had to think the same. And when you explain it to a child, I'm sure it sounds like it makes perfect sense.
Right.
And so she she healed Steve to make him young again, make his super soldier serum back to full working
potency?
Form, I guess. Potency. Potency? That's a good word. Potency.
Thank you.
And in the process, also manipulated his mind to believe that he'd always been an emissary of Hydra. So that's where that whole unfold is at. And as it unfolds in the comic books, like just seeing the different pieces of it was really awesome.
That's good, sir. That reminds me of the fact that I have to reread. I mean, when I talk to you, I have to reread so many things, brother. Catch him in the Hillcrest Plaza off First and Orchard at Top 5 Comics. Get him on Facebook, too. He's the notorious Steve. The man runs the show as far as comics go around here. And obviously, dude does zombie movies, too, brother. Always a pleasure.
Sure, no problem, man.
All right, man. That's beautiful stuff.